Good morning, everybody. This is the KPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims. Thank you for tuning in this morning. Salmon is still the word along the coast. There's basically a bunch of fish from points San Pedro up to above Duxbury. Everybody's catching fish. It seems to be smaller fish to the south, bigger fish to the north. But that was yesterday. Who knows what's going to happen today? Bodega Bay has fallen on lean times again. been a weird year up there. You know, everybody asks, with all the fish that have been right out in front of the Golden Gate all summer long, why don't they just go around the corner at Point Reyes and go up to Bodega Bay? Well, they haven't done that very much. You know, we got a two-week period there where you could go out and work hard and catch a fish or two. But it was never as good as the Bay Area. And then you'd have a couple days where you'd just blank, and then you'd get another good day, and then it just went away. So it's just kind of crazy. But take it what it is. If you want to go salmon fishing, you better get on a boat out of the Bay Area or Half Moon Bay, because that's where it's happening. And they're getting some nice-sized fish. It's a broad range of the size of fish, from your minimum size in your 20-inch range, clear on up to like 20 pounds, occasionally a little bit more than that. And I'm sure we're going to be seeing some bigger fish as time goes on. The boats are staying booked. And the six-pack boats, which cost you a little bit more, but you get, you know, they're a faster boat. You probably got better equipment there. They're getting limits to party boats, a little bit more affordable. They're going to load up the boat. They're getting limits. I mean, it's just fabulous. So, and then, don't go look in the store at the price of salmon. My goodness, you'll have a heart attack. But you want your own. That's what you got to do. And then the rock fishing has just been good. The tuna fishing, I'm waiting to see what Barry's has to say. There's tuna all along the coast of California, but it all depends on the temperature of the water and how far out you have to go. There's tuna all up and down, albacore we're talking about, all up and down the coast of California, but in some cases they might be 80 miles out, in some cases they might be 20 miles out. Well, a sport boat or a party boat isn't going to go 80 miles. My goodness, can't do it. But when they get in close, everybody goes after them. And who knows what else you might catch in the middle of them. I mean, up out of Fort Bragg, and there has been, when that current comes in close, you've caught some yellowtails, some yellowfin, bluefin tuna, some billfish occasionally are taken up there, some marlin. It's crazy. But it all has to do with that water temperature and the food that is in it, and the fish follow that food, and that's what it's all about. Kind of interesting, actually. Up in the mountains, we're kind of experiencing, you know, we have all this water, and we still have excess water in a few rivers. The East Fork of the Carson is one of them, but it's not as bad as it was. And they've been loading them up with fish. And so there's a little bit more fishable water. The fish do get spread out a little bit when they plant with water, when water is higher, especially if they purposely plant them in a good run or riffle as opposed to a hole. Then they tend to spread out both up and down. So you won't be just confined to the holes on the river. And I think we all know what that's about. That's not a whole lot of fun. Got to go find your own spot. This is a good year to do that. But we'll get a report there. But, you know, other places up in the Feather River country, I mean, it's the old summer doldrums, you know. You can catch fish, but things are happening very early and very late in the day. And that's just the way it is right now. And it's not going to be that much longer. Here we are at mid-August. And all of a sudden, you're going to see, especially in the mountains, those nighttime temperatures kind of creep down a little bit. It's all a very subtle thing, but then you're going to see a little bit more activity in the fish. And of course, any heat wave we have, the lakes are affected a lot more. That sun gets high in the sky and heats those lakes up, and then you got to go down deep, and there doesn't seem to be nearly as much aquatic activity. So it's all a big chain reaction. You know what I mean? Have patience. If you're up there now, go early and late. So deer season, the archery season has been going on over in the Coast Range for several weeks. It's just one of those things that's been so hot, we don't get a lot of reports. I'm sure some people go over there and do okay, but, you know, it gets hot. And with an archer, you got to put some miles on those feet of yours. So it doesn't make for a good situation. We'll get a report from Mike Waltrying what they're seeing up in the Sierra, because that archery season is about to open. And that is always a good indicator of the rifle season a little bit later on. So that's what we'll be doing there. Then I got a hold of, I was trying to get a hold of Don Wyrock over at Angler's Edge in Gardnerville. It's a fly shop over there, just to do a little roundup. Well, a guy named Tom Peterson was there, and he says, Bob, to be honest with you, I don't have the real lowdown on the local stuff. I just got back from a big fishing trip. And so we talked about his fishing trip. This was he was gone for almost 2 months, and he fished rivers that I think we've all heard, if you're a fisherman growing up, you know, the Bighorn, the Firehole, the Madison, things like that. And so I just talked to him a little bit about that. It just sounded kind of fascinating to me. Of course, we'll get some reports from the ocean and the salmon fishing, good or bad, and the rock fishing. Of course, Barry's coming up in just a few minutes. Stampede Reservoir, Kokanee, been a great year. They're still catching the heck out of them. We have a report from the Walker River, the West Walker River. That river is absolutely loaded with fish. The Pickle Meadow area has gotten a lot of plants, both private and the state. So his fishing up there has been good. But that whole river, all along Highway 395, which is very accessible, has got fish in it. And it's about time, because that's one of the rivers that stayed high for so long. They got a late start there. Over at Clear Lake, I know it sounds odd, but fishing's pretty good for bass over there. And we're talking numbers right now. We're not talking size, although you always have a chance to catch big bass at Clear Lake, but to go over and catch 2 to 3 to 3.5 pound fish, that's a lot of fun. And now's the time to do that. We'll get a report from Troy Bella. We'll also check salmon on the Sacramento River. That's improving slightly up by Redding Red Bluff. Nice bright fish. And, you know, it's not great, but it sure is better than it was 2 weeks ago. We'll also check on the Feather River, and that's the same way. It's not great, but it sure is better than it was 2 weeks ago, and they are catching a few fish. You got to go out and put in your time to catch one or two fish, or maybe none. You know how that goes. And then there's stripers down at Decker Island. They constantly are on the move, but if you can catch them right, you can have a good day down there. There's a Fishing in the City program happening today. We'll fill you in with that. A little Delta black bass fishing. And Gary Coe will join us in the 7 o'clock hour and talk to us about how fabulous the fishing was at last week's Kokanee Power Derby at Whiskeytown. And a few of those guys went out the next day up to Trinity and fished for Kokanee there. We'll give you a report on that. So there's a bunch of stuff going on, all that coming up in the next 2 hours and 45 minutes on the KFBK Outdoor Show. Thanks for being here. Well, last week we finally got a report from Barry Canavero of Fish Sugar Sport Fishing in Fort Bragg that the weather set down. They got out for albacore. They had a couple of great trips. I know there was party boats that went on a little scouting expeditions that were planning to book trips with more people, providing the weather settled in. So let's find out if the weather stayed the same. Barry's with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, did it stay the same?
Of course not.
Oh, God.
We got four trips in a week, and then here we go again. And now you can't believe the difference in 1 week in this town. I mean, it was like the tuna was on fire. I mean, the salmon were on fire.
Yeah.
You couldn't find a motel. One of our guys on Saturday had to stay in Willits, and it was unreal. But it was good fishing, and there was a lot of boats. I mean, beginners that knew absolutely nothing were getting fish. And the worst part is some of these guys go out there and they got 40, 50 fish, and they don't have anything. They don't know what to do with them. I mean, that's a crying shame. But other than that, it was good. We got them sometimes by ourselves. Big area of fish. So you didn't have to be crowded together. And then the fun part of it was on our way home, we would be tacking home, and Jeff would be cleaning fish. And all of a sudden, this one time, I would think it was Saturday or Sunday, one of the days, the guys had all these fish on the back. They wanted to take a group picture, and so trying to take a picture, and then we got a triple. What a mess. And that's tuna fishing. I mean, that's the fun of it. I mean, these aren't big fish. They're probably anywhere from 10 to 20. Maybe a few bigger fish were caught, but majority of the fish were small. When you hear big numbers, that's usually what goes on.
Yeah. But that's those are still good size. I mean, fight like crazy.
That's a lot of meat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, especially when you're doubling up and stuff. And then when you're throwing swim baits and you get them on the swim baits, too. And so it was good, and we're looking forward to maybe doing it again. Not this week is pretty well shot, but the week after. I think starting next weekend, maybe. I don't know. We'll know. We're watching the weather every day. And, of course, up here, you know what we got? We got the opening of salmon on Tuesday on the 15th.
Yeah.
But we are chartered for it. But whether we do any good, I already talked to the people. They're regulars that book salmon all the time with us up here. And they say, well, we're going to go anyhow. If we don't get it, we don't get any. But the guy is an older guy, and he says, I just got to do it one more time.
Yeah.
So I'm not looking forward to having a big salmon season up here, but at least we'll get something different.
Sure.
The town is empty right now. I don't know if it'll fill up for salmon or not, because there has been no really word about it. Once in a while, somebody would caught a silver when they're rock cod fishing.
Yeah.
But the rock cod fishing's pretty good. Yesterday, we weren't working, so we said, well, let's go out and get some fish anyhow, that we can start getting some together to bring home. Heck, we didn't even go. We went out to the first red buoy, went left a little bit, and went in there. We didn't do, I mean, of course, all we're looking for really was ling cod, but we got three big vermilion and big up to 9-10 pounds.
Wow, that's great.
And then a couple of nice ling cod, and that's all we need. And it was okay. You know, I mean, very, very fishable. It's fishable for rock cod. So listen to this one. You know, you talked earlier about what weird fish you get in Fort Bragg.
Yeah.
How about this? We're up at Westport on Wednesday, and we're on one of our drifts by what they call a winery there. And guy gets a nice fish, you know, and you're running and doing everything, you know. I said, well, maybe we got a salmon, you know. It wasn't heavy like a ling cod, and we get it up, and it's a bonita.
A bonita.
A bonita. 57 degrees water.
Oh, be doggone.
And we were in, I don't know, maybe 60 feet. I couldn't believe it. I mean, that's how weird this year is.
Yeah.
Up here, anyhow. I mean, there's some weird fish being caught. But so, one thing this week that happened that I don't know if you know about or not, but Gordy Huff finally retired, sold the boat, and is retired. A legend of the bay.
Yeah. The Morning Star. The beginning of the end was when Loch Lomond Marina got sold, yeah, or whatever. And, you know, they just turned their backs on all the boats and the fishermen there. They took out the gas docks. They eliminated the dry storage. All they did was build a whole bunch of condos.
Right.
And people that I know that spend their summers in Walnut Grove Marina, or the winters there too, with their big boats, they keep it there at Loch Lomond, and they're never going to go back there. And, you know, parking was tough for Gordy. So then he had to go up to Vallejo Marina, and that separated him from his passion, which is halibut down further in the bay. So he hung it up. That's really a shame, because he was a good, he was the one you look for a halibut, period.
Yeah. So, that was the trouble with that marina. They didn't cater to the fishermen.
No, they,
so many places,
none of them do, Barry.
For years,
none of them do. None of them do.
And yet you bring people in, they don't believe how many boats, friends of yours that come in and rent slips, and like you were in dry storage, just like I was there at Loch Lomond. But, you know, that's what happens.
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, that's why I'm not going to keep a boat down there anymore, because none of the marinas take care. You know, they take out cleaning stations. They don't care. They're going to make money doing something else. They just don't care. They're having trouble at Berkeley. They closed a bait shop there. I mean, what's that all about? My God. The only thing that's going as a real fishing harbor anymore is Emeryville.
Emeryville, right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, we know. I mean, you know, we move around so much. And, you know, some of the places like Sassoon kind of catered to us. But yet Pittsburgh didn't, and they put all the charter boats way in the back where you can't be seen. And then other places we've been, I don't know, Richmond was the same way when they changed the ownership there and Harbor Master. Absolutely.
Took away the dry storage there, because I used to do that at Richmond.
Yeah, so.
And then, you know.
We're up at Fort Bragg. They cater to us up here. They love us up here.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, when a marina either doesn't have or takes out a cleaning station, that really is the final slap in the face, because all the regulations, you know, you can't clean a lot of these fish out on your boat.
No, definitely.
So now what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, what do you do?
Yeah.
It is
because, like, in Suisun City, we had to go to the fishing game and get permission to clean fish on the boat, because we had stripers and sturgeon, which are not allowed to be cleaned on the boat.
Yeah.
And they gave us permission to do that. But you clean it on the boat, but you couldn't dump them in the water.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whatever, we live with it.
Yeah.
Whatever. But so, you know, we're hoping for the tuna to show up. We've got some rock cod trips. We've got a couple salmon trips. And I still got my list for tuna. I tell you, after your show last week, we had, what, 5 calls for tuna. But unfortunately, we can't help the people. I mean, we sure want to do it. You know, believe me, we want to do it. But we'll see what happens with the weather. You can't go out there with 12-foot seas, that's for sure.
No. And you got to be ready to go in a day or two's notice, too.
Yeah, well, we can look at weather 5 days out. And some of the sites you can go further out than that. But whether it's reliable or not, that's another question.
Yeah.
Because, you know, last week, Tuesday was supposed to be nasty, and Tuesday was flat as glass, and Wednesday wasn't nasty, but it wasn't great. So, but then the rest of the week, Saturday was nice. You know, we haven't seen the sun here very much, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It's foggy every day. I think that usually August and September start to get some nice weather. So on the inside, it's still foggy, but at least it's fishable.
Yeah. Okay, Barry. Well, a good week, a bad week. Next week must be a good week.
I hope so. Every other week.
Okay, Barry. Thanks.
And we did that with a full moon, too.
Well,
there goes that theory.
All right. Well, good luck this week.
All righty. Thanks, Bob.
Barry Canavero, Fish Hookers Sport Fishing. Book a trip, 916-870-4225. Okay? We talk about the weather. I have to repeat it every time I hear something like that. A retired Navy man who was involved in weather forecasts for the Navy, which is pretty important, let's face it. He says, you know, you see all these 7-day forecasts on television around here and everything, and how when you get to that seventh day, if you can think back, well, wait a minute, that's not what they said 7 days ago. It's never what they said 7 days ago. And what this guy says, we're pretty good at acting at forecasting the weather up to about 30 hours. After that, the odds go way down. You're going to get it right. So you just cannot count on it. Okay, when we come back, Scott Laseth, by the way, is deer hunting in Montana. He was going to try to call in maybe a little early. If not, we'll have a great salmon report for you. Don't go away. Well, I've been checking the hotlines down in the Bay Area, and every time I checked Emeryville, R.J. Waldron, who has been on the program several times now, he has the six-pack boat Sundance that you book out of Emeryville. Every report had the Sundance with limits of salmon, so I got a hold of R.J. yesterday afternoon. R.J., the madness continues. I cannot keep track of where all these fish are, and I finally came to the conclusion, out of the Bay Area, they're everywhere. What's happening?
They are. And, you know, it's funny. I think that's the hardest part of the skipper's days right now is figuring out which place they want to go to. You go out in the morning, first light, you go under the Golden Gate Bridge, and we're all scratching our head. Hey, should we go to the south side? Should we fish Muscle Rock? Should we fish Pedro? Should we go straight out to the end of the channel? Should we go to Muir Beach? Should we go to Duxbury? Should we go to Devil Point? I guess it's a good problem to have. There's fish everywhere. There was limits of salmon caught today and yesterday and probably the day before that from Pedro Point all the way to Devil Point.
My goodness. So
it's awesome. It's really good.
It boggles the mind, you know. We've talked before. I don't even know what to think about it. This year, with all the projections to be hopefully as good as last year, which was not a good year, and then to have this happen, everybody's hoping it never ends.
Yeah. When's the bubble going to burst, right?
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to have good fishing all the way through the end of the season. I mean, that's just, you know, from what I see right now, it definitely looks that way. So.
Well, you know, those fish are usually, they're starting to head up the river right about now, and I don't see any evidence of it.
You know, I've been kind of popping around on Facebook and some of the other stuff, and I see some fish getting caught in the river at Nimbus at the, up at Hazel Avenue and stuff, so I think there is some fish.
Yeah, but there's always going to be, you know, you got fish going up to Sacramento every month of the year. It's almost like a spring run now that's in the river. Down at the mouth of the American is most consistent, and the Nimbus Basin we don't even count because there's a bunch of snaggers up there.
Right.
So, but you know, they may catch three or four fish in the morning at the mouth, or maybe seven or eight on a good day, and that's not exactly red hot. And it's not happening anywhere else that I can find. More than an occasional fish. You know, there's no runs. So, just those fish are just happy in the ocean. Looks like they're going to stay there for a while. What's been the average size range?
Well, definitely, I can tell you on the south side. From Muscle Rocks on down, there's been a lot of smaller fish, 20 to 25 inch fish. The action's been red hot. Guys that show up early in the morning, that get on the grounds quick, are rewarded with a lot of good fishing. I mean, multiple hookups and hot action. It has been a morning thing. So, get out there early, if you're going on your own boat. And then it's kind of a pick throughout the day, but from the channel on up to the north side, there has been some bigger fish, but today was the first day that we fished on the north side it seems like almost a month. I think it's just a couple weeks, 2-3 weeks. And we had a mix. We had them from 20 inches to 18 pounds, but half of our fish were the same size, 20 to 25 inch fish.
Uh-huh.
So it's a mix.
Yeah. Well, at least those bigger fish are available. So, everybody's hoping for that.
Yep.
Now, How deep are you fishing? Is it the standard procedure, like 25 to 40?
Yeah, 25 to 40. Actually, we had some fish at 50, just over 50 poles today off the stern. I'm running the rods right on the bow at 25 poles, and they have good action there. We typically have always just been kind of a straight bait kind of boat with no flashers, but over the last few weeks, we have been running some spin cone flashers. The UV has been working. We also have been using a yellow one and a green one. And I don't know if that's with the smaller fish, it's been working better, you know, when they're schooled up, it kind of triggers them. We have been doing that as well.
How far out are you fishing? I mean, earlier they were getting them out at Enbuie in the north and Esbuie. Are they going out that far?
I think that there's some commercial guys working out there, and there's some private boats that are still running out there. But pretty much all the fishing that's occurring for the fleet, the San Francisco fleet's all on the beach. Pedro Point the other day, we were fishing in really close to the rocks, 35, 40 feet of water, and Muscle Rocks, same thing. And then today we're 50, 60 feet of water, from Rocky Point on up. So, edge of the bar, the channels, all, it's just the normal spots, the normal north side spots people are fishing in.
That's RJ Waldron. He skippers the Sundance. It's a six packer. To book a trip, call Emeryville, area code 510-652-3403. Ask for the Sundance. Also talked to Chris Lawrenson last night about fishing at Bodega Bay. Chris, you fished earlier this week. Bodega Bay had been teasing everybody, and then people were catching fish. It wasn't as good as the Bay Area, but it was at least somewhat consistent. What happened earlier this week?
Well, Bob, I took the bait, as it were, and I decided to go out fishing this past Monday and Tuesday. And I got a small 24-inch salmon on Monday and a halibut down on 10-mile beach around Abbott's Lagoon. On Tuesday, I just couldn't stand it. I went back out again, and I got a 26-inch salmon down by the old Coast Guard station just north of Point Reyes. And I was in a fleet of five boats. Two of them were six-pack boats, and we were all doing about two fish to a boat, and it was – it was a tough bite.
Yeah, sounds like it. What has happened since? With Bodega Bay, we all agree that the best fishing there is July, but August is kind of a crapshoot. Do you think the fish have kind of evolved back out of there now?
It's hard to say, Bob. I took a picture of the best possible bait I could possibly see on my fish finder. I mean, it just completely lit up the screen, and I trolled that for about a half an hour, got bored. I never got bit in that bait ball, and so that was kind of discouraging. What was different this week is there were no whales around where I was fishing. There were some birds. There were birds on the water, murres, but there were no whales around me, and that's different from when I was catching fish 2 weeks ago out at the Bodega Head in that 270-foot of water. And so I think that's one of the big determining factors that maybe there's not as much bait in right now.
Yeah. Was that bait that you sent me a picture of?
Yeah, that was off of, that was on Monday. Yeah. That was off of Abbott's Lagoon in about 60 feet of water.
That was just solid bait.
Solid bait, and I couldn't pick a fish out of that, and neither did anybody else that was working that same area.
It's funny how that happens, huh?
It really is. I got out early in the morning and left the dock at 6 o'clock. I'm down there by seven mirrors on the water. You would think that I could shag something out of it, and there was nothing. I didn't have the right gear out. I started with a watermelon apex on one side and straight bait on the other, just like everybody else was doing, and I couldn't get a bite. Raised the downrigger up, went down deeper. it wasn't my day. It was fishing.
Well, it makes you wonder, we know it's bait, but what kind of bait is it that's that no fish wants no part of down there?
Exactly. Boy, when I'm doing as good as the charter boat guys, I feel pretty good. And they're my friends, and they make a living at what they're doing out there. And we all share, where are you, what does it look like, all that kind of stuff. And some days everybody is just searching to find the bait, find the birds. And some days it's just a guess where to go.
That's Chris Lawrenson. You want to get a hold of Chris. He spends quite a bit of his time down at Lawrenson Yacht Harbor. That's in Oakley, just within sight of the Antioch Bridge. His number, 925-757-1916. He operates the marina there, but he has a place, and he keeps his boat at Bodega Bay. So he's a good source. When we come back, Mr. Dan Bacher, don't go away. Well, knowing Dan Bacher, he's come up with something, actually skimming the headlines this week. I didn't see too much new stuff, but Dan lives in a different world sometimes, and he's with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. A couple things I wanted to talk about. The first thing is Recreational Boaters of California, which is a group that represents the boating community, largest boating group in California. They announced their opposition to the tunnels. And the second thing is I wanted to talk about Gordy Huff's and Mike, Deckhand Mike's mm-hmm. retirement from the sport fishing industry with the selling of Gordy Huff's boat, the Morningstar.
Yeah.
So first, regarding the Recreational Boaters of California, they had a meeting on August 1st where they voted to, join the opposition to the Delta Tunnels. And this is really important because this is a statewide group with a lot of people from Southern California. And they all agreed that these tunnels would be a disaster. And so they're joining a growing number of fishing groups, tribes, conservation groups, environmental mm-hmm. justice organizations, family farmers, Delta residents, businesses, and elected leaders in opposing Governor Jerry Brown's legacy project. And at this time, there are, as far as I know, no fishing groups, no environmental groups, with the exception of the Natural Heritage Institute, which really isn't an environmental group. It's pretty much controlled by the state government and Department of Water Resources, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. And no environmental justice groups are supporting it. So that,
legitimate scientist.
Right, or any legitimate scientist.
Yeah.
Either state or federal.
That's not bought and paid for by the government.
Right, and that's important because these are groups, one of the myths is that, this is a big project that will benefit Southern California. And I still hear it, not as much as I used to, but this is going to go for Southern California lawns and swimming pools. No, it isn't. 80%, the biggest group that benefits from this is Big Ag, Stuart Resnick.
Big Agriculture.
And Westlands Water District.
And here's something else. We can't forget this, Dan, is that, Brown, for like years and years, he put a price on the tunnels. And, of course, you think it's still the same price as when they came up with it 10 years ago? But
right.
That's what they call it. And right. So it's going to cost a heck of a lot more than whatever they're saying it is. And here's another thing. They say that we're not going to pump any more water south.
Yeah, right.
All the legislature has to do is vote to divert more water, and it's done. The people have no say in it. It's a political, look at the protection we have here. The legislature can take that away in a day.
Yeah. Or the administration can take it away in a day, to be honest with you. But the reasons why the Recreational Boaters of California, RBOC, voted to oppose the tunnels is because of specific boater-related concerns with the notice of determination for the California Water Fix Environmental Impact Statement Report. And these include the significant negative impact that will occur with the closure of waterways to navigation during the lengthy construction period, the absence of a plan to ensure that the Delta infrastructure will not only be preserved but improved, and finally, the lack of surety that the plan will address the threat that climate change and increased water transfer pose to the amount and quality of water in the Delta. And, you know, so this is a big, big group, and there's over 3 million recreational boaters throughout California, from north to south. Now, moving to the next topic, I talked to Gordy Huff yesterday, and that announced that he'd sold his boat, and he and Mike Schimmel called Deck Dog and a variety of other names by Gordy, ranging from Deck Princess to Deck Zombie to Deck Convict.
To his built-in excuse.
Yeah, on every day. He's retiring, and we're really going to miss him. He was one of the most fun guys to fish with. He was like going on his boat was not only a fun fishing experience, but a good comedic experience.
Yeah, he does have a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
So and you know, aside from that, you think of just one other skipper in the whole Bay Area that really savvies halibut better than Gordy Huff.
Oh, yeah, none.
None. So we lost a good skipper there.
Yeah. I'm sorry to see him go, but
He's put up with the rat race, and I was just talking to Barry about, look at Loch Lomond Marina. They stopped becoming a real marina. You know, they took out the gas pumps. So that's really nice. Now he's got to go to San Francisco or Sausalito for gas, and then they built condos everywhere and eliminated most of the parking for the party. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
So I don't blame him, really.
Yeah.
I don't blame him.
He was birthed at Vallejo, and he did a couple sturgeon trips this, you know, July, I think. The fish never really miss him.
Yeah.
Because he started with us. Back when Mike O'Connell and Bass Tub, Cliff Amundson were running.
Yeah. And then, of course, Mike passed away years ago.
Yeah, 2002.
He always had a great-looking boat, took a lot of pride in it, just like Gordy does with his boat, you know.
Right.
So those are characters that, you know, they leave us, but they don't leave our memory, do they?
No, because I'm always still talking about Cliff Amphelson's annex and all the things that he used to do. And this is all, you know, Gordy and Cliff and Mike and others, they were all that old school of party boat skippers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were totally into the experience of fishing. In other words, you'd ask somebody that went on Cliff Amundson's boat, how did you do this? Oh, we had a great day, man. He was hilarious. I said, what did you catch? Well, we didn't catch much, but it was a great day.
Yeah. And then Jim Smith retired this year.
Yeah, I know.
So a happy hooker.
All the, yeah.
And he was with stripers like Gordy was with halibut.
Yeah.
He had an understanding of stripers, and we miss him. And he's always a great interview because he would offer insights you don't ever hear from anybody else.
Right. Yeah.
Just from years and years of experience.
And the thing about I miss about Cliff Amundson, because he loved to do afternoon trips, and I loved to do afternoon trips, and those were some of the best trips I ever had. Especially fishing at the South Tower.
Yeah, and did you hear, Tubby, his son, who runs the Bass Tub, last week made a heck of a rescue, rescued 10 people off a boat at Alcatraz before it sank.
Yeah, Yeah, and so I called him up to talk to him, get a fishing report, and he answered the phone, Hero.
He made a, you know, after everybody was safe, he made a joke about it because everybody was trying to give him credit, and he wouldn't have any part of it. So
yeah,
he was running a ferry, I think.
Yeah, he was running a ferry. He tried to explain to the news that this is my job. When I'm a captain, that's what I have to do.
Yeah, right. So anyway, and then, Jackie Douglas is, she's still running a boat, but she's taking care of Roger Thomas.
Yeah.
And Roger's battling cancer and still the most gentlemanly gentleman you've ever met in all your life.
Oh, exactly.
So, and done so much work for the fishery. Anyway, it's we got to be ready for the change in era, right, Dan?
Yep.
So, okay. Well, let's hope we don't have any bad news next week.
Okay.
You have a good week.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dan Bakker of the Fish Sniffer. If you want to inquire about subscribing, it's easy. You dial 800-748-6599. They will call you back during the week. Okay? All right. When we get back, we'll have a fresh report on salmon in the Feather River. Don't go away. Welcome back to the second hour of the KPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims, Saturdays 5 to 8 here on KPK, 1530 a.m. and 93.1 FM. Let's check with Rob Reimers. Things should be improving slightly around the valley, and he's been on the Feather fishing for salmon. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Bob.
So we're noticing at least a slight improvement almost each week now, aren't we?
Yes, we are. This last full moon's bringing some fish up. We're getting a few fish a day up here. Up here where I'm fishing, above Gridley, there's usually, just two or three of us in the hole, and we were all getting a fish a day, but now there's probably about eight or nine boats in the hole. I think somebody told them.
Somebody always tells them.
Yeah, they'll probably be, out of these eight or nine boats, there'll probably be half a dozen fish caught today. So
yeah.
It's doing pretty good.
Yeah, you got a chance to catch a salmon. How's the fish? Is it good shape?
Oh, they're just chrome bright.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't got a dark one yet, but I'm sure they're in here, but we haven't got one.
Well, you're going to have a few fish that have been there for three or four weeks, too. They're going to start turn color a little bit.
Yeah.
But nature has a way of keeping fish bright for their journey. I mean, it's kind of odd because we catch salmon when the American River fish, which is a late run of fish, start in October. I need to get toward the end of October, and these fish start getting a little bronze down in the Sacramento River, at the Brickyard or Garcia Bend. And yet up the upper Sacramento River, up by Red Bluff and Redding, they're bright silver. Well, there's a huge oil content that nature packs along with those fish because they know they have a longer journey, and it keeps them. It's just amazing how bright and fresh it can be.
Yeah, and also too, when they start turning, especially the bucks, the meat will still be, bright orange. For a while. The hens tend to lose their color first. Because they use a lot more of their stuff making eggs.
Yeah.
When you start getting later in the season like that, you want to keep the bucks for eating, or smoking. They're out there a lot better.
Yeah. Well, once the flesh starts to pale a little bit, then you're losing quality.
Right. Right. Exactly.
What are you using?
Right now, we're just sort of anchored up here by these cliffs, just kind of waiting a while, and we're using a flatfish with a wrap on it, and we got a cut plug out there, and we're just kind of experimenting around.
Yeah.
And then after it gets light and sun gets up good, we're going to switch over to row.
So, okay.
We're just kind of trying everything.
Are you going to fish row on the anchor as well?
No, we're going to go up there and
back row.
Dead stick row. Yeah, dead stick row or back troll it.
Okay. How about bank fishermen? Are they catching any fish?
They're getting a few, yeah. They're getting some. There's probably, up here at the outlet, there's probably a dozen guys on the bank this morning. And surprisingly enough, it seems like everybody's kind of working with everybody. Nobody's going crazy.
They got tired of fighting all those years.
Well, you know, I think the mentality has changed a little bit, you know, and the 70s redneck guys don't seem to be here as much, you know, and everybody's kind of figured out that it's just better to work together.
Yeah, that's a good thing. So, fishing, but, fishing should be fun.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we're out here.
Okay, Rob, what about the bite up at Bullard's Bar? Did you get up there at all this last week?
I haven't been up there. I had a buddy of mine head up there this week, and he said that, you know, they got some fish, but it is definitely slowing down.
Yeah.
But they probably hooked, you know, probably had bites from probably about 30 fish, but they only landed about, you know, I think he said 12 or 15, something
yeah.
like that.
Okay.
So.
And what about, you know, I have to ask every once in a while, just in case there's a surprise, is anybody catching any salmon in Lake Oroville?
Well, they are catching a few. What it is, it's just the fish that are left over. They didn't go over the spillway. There are a few fish in there, and they are bunching up, and the bait balls are starting to bunch up. So you can, you know, kind of run around and find them here and there and catch a few. But, you know, it's not enough for me to want to take clients up there.
A year, I guess, huh?
Pardon? I think we were cut out for a second.
I say, we just lost a year. If that's what it seems like.
Yeah, we did. We lost a year. They just they did what Mother Nature programmed them to do. And when that emergency spillway was running, they just went over the top with it.
I guess so. I mean, when you think of that, that's different than a normal flow. You know, they suck water out of the bottom of the dam and all this kind of stuff. When it starts going over the top of a dam, that creates a tremendous current in that lake. And, you know, the fish tend to want to migrate down, I guess. You know, it's hard to figure out what their instincts are telling them to do, but the only answer here can be is a lot of them went over that spillway.
Yeah, well, you know, their instincts are telling them to go over it because, you know, theoretically their parents should have got up to where they are and spawned, and then there should be a way for them to get back.
Yeah.
So, you know, that spillway's running, there's our ticket, and they go.
Yeah. So. The man who thinks like a fish.
Yeah.
Okay, Rob, well, thank you. Good luck today. Let us know before the end of the program if you do any good.
All righty.
All right. See you later.
Okay. Bye.
Rob Reimer's Rustic Rob's Guide Service. To book a trip, 530-632-0051. We will not be back with Mr. Scott Laseth after the break because he's deer hunting in Montana. He sent me a text late last night saying the deer hunt starts at 6, so he won't be able to call in, but we'll have some other goodies for you. Hang on. Welcome back. Scott is not here, but I have to tell you, yesterday I called Angler's Edge in Gardnerville. It's a little fly shop that keeps an eye on things. And Don Wyrock wasn't there. I've had Don on the air for years periodically. But a guy named Tom Peterson was there. And I said, well, Tom, you know what's going on locally? He says, well, Bob, I know the waters, but I really don't know what's happening right now. I've been on a fishing trip. I said, well, where'd you go? And he told me about this trip. I says, well, let's talk about that. So just for the heck of it, out of the blue, a very nice guy named Tom Peterson went on a trip. He started, his first destination was Bend, Oregon, and then up into Montana and Wyoming, and see if you recognize some of the waters he talks about. Tom, I originally called Angler's Edge to talk to Don Wyrock, who's off today. But in talking to you, I don't know if I want to talk so much about local waters, but I'd like to hear about the trip you just took. This is a trip that I think every trout fisherman has dreamed about taking. How long were you gone?
I was gone a total of about 7.5 weeks. My trips usually go to 2 months, about that time. Yeah.
Yeah, you got plenty of time to do whatever you want, I guess, huh?
I did.
What was your first destination?
Well, my first destination was Bend, Oregon, and I took advantage of the salmon fly hatch on the lower Deschutes River, and then we put one day also in the upper Deschutes and tried to get into some nice brook trout that come down out of the lake up there, and spent one day on the Metolius, which is probably one of the toughest fly fishing rivers in the country. It's very technical, and the fish are very, very intelligent. Unfortunately, most of my trip was spent on very technical and difficult waters. I don't know why I like to frustrate myself, but I do.
Well, how was your trip on the Deschutes?
Deschutes was good. The salmon fly hatch was a little later because of the winter we had. Everything kind of came out a little bit later, which made parts of my trip difficult. But the salmon fly hatch was a little later in the year. I was there just after Memorial Day weekend.
Uh-huh.
And the fishing was fair, but it was slower than it was the year before. I've been up there the year before.
Did you catch rainbows?
Yeah, they have a species. It's not a distinct species, but they have a type of trout in the Deschutes area and in Oregon in general called the Red Band. And they are one tough little bugger.
Yeah, it is a distinct species of rainbow trout. It's one of a number of strains. So how big a fish did you catch?
In the 15 to 18 inch
range. That's beautiful. Yeah. Boy, yeah. That's what you went for, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're beautiful. And I'll tell you, not this year, but a couple of years ago, I was fishing the Deschutes. I actually had a 17-inch red band darn near take me into my backing. So not only are they good fighters, but they know how to use their water very well. The Deschutes is a big river.
Sure.
And a lot of current, and the long-living, bright fish there really know how to use the current well.
Well, and then on the upper end, of course, you have Century Drive that goes through all the lakes and everything. It's a wonderful area.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons we went to the upper for a day. And that was my first time on the upper. And I can't remember when they opened. I think they opened that for fishing in the middle of May. And there's some nice fish that come down from the lake there.
Yeah. And on the Metolius up in Oregon, did you end up catching any fish?
I did not. Matter of fact, the people, and neither did the people I was with. But they have. I mean, the people who live there who have the opportunity to fish it year-round do well. And there's some nice-sized bull trout in there. The bull trout seem to come up there more often after the kokanee spawn, and either eat the kokanee eggs or the dying kokanee. And there's some big bull trout in there. I've known people to catch 20 to 24-inch bull trout in there, and they can be a handful.
Yeah.
But the Metolius is just a beautiful piece of water.
Sure,
there's sections of it that are glacier blue, and the scenery around there, it's just a nice place.
Yeah.
Very, very nice place.
Then you headed northeast to Montana, Idaho, Wyoming. What was your first stop over there?
Well, I stopped briefly in Spokane, and I went up and fished the Coeur d'Alene River, which is actually in Idaho, above the town of Coeur d'Alene, a little bit northeast of there. And again, it was a beautiful setting, but again, I ran into a lot of problems with waters that I had wanted to fish like that were still, runoff was still very prominent, just like it was here in Northern California and in Western Nevada.
Yeah.
So I didn't really fish there. I had the opportunity to spend some time with a young lady I know there who is a very avid fly fisher person, and her claim to fame is in the last 3 years, she's taught over 1,000 women how to fly fish. So,
oh, good for her.
And she was being filmed by a young man by the name of Todd Moan, who has done a lot of great fly fishing films. So it was a good time.
Sure, sure. Let me
I went on from there to Craig, Montana.
Okay. Colorado.
And fish the Missouri. No, Craig, Montana.
Oh, Craig, Montana. Okay.
Yep. And that's kind of one of the headquarters for the fishing the Missouri River, and had three really good days on there.
Now, what kind of fish were you catching there?
The Missouri River is one of those rivers that has 6,000 fish per mile. So if you don't catch a fish in there, you know, take up bowling. You know?
what size fish were there?
They vary. The dry fly bite was pretty much the smaller fish, you know, 12 to 16 inches. But with streamers and nymphing, I caught the biggest one, I think there was about 23.
Anyway, that was just part of Tom Peterson's trip. Other streams that he fished were the Bighorn River. You know, you're up in Wyoming and Montana, the Bighorn River, the Firehole River, the Madison River, Silver Creek in Idaho, and the Owyhee in Oregon, all very well-known trout fishing streams. What a trip, huh? Anyway, he was at Angler's Edge in Gardnerville. That number, 775-781-7112. I talked to Alan Bruza of the Sportsman's Den in Quincy about fishing up in that area. Alan, you know, I have heard more about Frenchman's Reservoir this year than I have Davis Lake, even though they started planning Davis Lake. What's your experience there?
Well, you know, Frenchman has been a lot better, especially for the fly guys, the fly fishermen over there at Frenchman. They've had a good summer, and now, you know, with this heat wave, and it's just starting to cool down a little bit. You know, last week and 2 weeks ago, you know, with those temperatures, it just put down the fish in a lot of our lakes up here.
And the streams, too.
Well, and the streams, too. You know, we're getting somewhat in the evening, some caddis and some mays coming off, mayflies. But overall, we're just starting to see the stream, the Middle Fork, it's receded. And I think next week or the week after, that'll be the time to kind of think about, you know, hitting Plumas County.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. That water in reservoirs, especially the top few feet, can really warm up. I mean, really warm. And then if it stays warm, then that warm temperatures, you know, drops down 5 feet, 7 feet, 8 feet, almost eliminating the fly fishermen except for maybe very brief periods of time. What kind of cooling does it take to fix that?
Well, right now, Lake Albemarle surface temps are about 79. The fish are holding over the springs right now. We just need some cool mornings, and, you know, it's around the corner, but what they're doing, it's an early morning bite, and then that's about it. You're fishing mealworms or crickets off the bottom on the springs. Very few browns right now. They're getting the salmon, but they're extremely small over there at Almanor. And really, the fish haven't backed up into the Hamilton branch like we normally see with the high water.
I wonder, just because, you know, like last year, they were stacked in there so much.
Every year, they stack in there. This is the first year that I haven't seen them come in any numbers. Now, it might happen here, you know, shortly, but I just had a guy come in the other day, and he said, there's some fish in there, but not like normal.
Maybe it's because there's more water coming in all over the lake this year. Who knows?
Yeah, and they're not really dropping in the lake. They just started to reseed it. I was at Butt Lake last week, and the fishers just came into the powerhouse and the estuary over there, and it's late for Butt Lake, too.
Yeah. And then the streams, let's never mind the streams, because I know what you're going to say about the feather. You got to get into the wild area, but even that's got to be warm, huh?
Well, it's warm, but, you know, with the quantity of water, and it really flushed good this year, and the pools are just absolutely brilliant. You know, it's anything down below Nelson Creek, where Nelson Creek and the Middle Fork, I had some guys that fished Nelson Creek the other day, and, you know, they did fair, and that was in the evening time. But I would recommend go high in elevation, get up to the Gold Lake Basin and fish those small little lakes up there.
Yeah, at least you can enjoy yourself, you know.
Oh, yeah, Packer, sardine, it's absolutely, you know, beautiful. They're getting ready to go back to school, so the crowds are not going to be there. And Gold Lake is just so beautiful.
That's Alan Bruiser, the Sportsman's Den in Quincy. If you're heading up from the valley, you get to the main part of town. He's on the right-hand side in the secondary town. The Sportsman's Den is number 530-283-2733. There's Stripers at Decker Island. Mark Wilson will join us after the break and tell us where. Welcome back, welcome back. Well, as we talk about for years and years, it's state fair time. The only difference is it's the old state fair time, not the new state fair time. That means Stripers are in the Delta, specifically around Decker Island, but they are a mobile group of fish. Find them one day, lose them the next. It's that easy. A guy that's been chasing them, of course, is our friend Mark Wilson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
So they can be elusive down there, those little critters, huh?
Well, you know, they were there for about 2 weeks, and it was a pretty good bite, and you didn't have to go very far. They were in one location, and it was about maybe a mile long, and you could catch fish all the way and good-sized fish up into the 10, 12-pound range, and then all of a sudden, Monday, Tuesday was a real good bite for the guys. They were catching 20, 25 keepers a trip. Wednesday, it shut off. They took off.
Yeah.
They have tails. They disappeared. Where did they go and all that? And, yeah. And all of a sudden, they're gone. So I didn't get a chance to get. I had errands to do as we didn't want to talk about. But anyway, I got out yesterday, and my first thing, I had a high tide. I wanted to hit that Decker Island. Even though the guys told me the fish aren't there, they moved over to San Joaquin. We're just knocking them dead over there. So I went to Decker, and they were right. There was no fish. I trolled around, so I didn't waste a whole lot of time. I made one long pass and didn't get any fish. So packed it up and headed over to San Joaquin to all the hot spots that were going on over there. And you know what? They were gone from there, too. They had 2 days of good bites over there. And then all the fish are gone. But I did catch some. I wound up with two keepers on the San Joaquin, fishing between the mouth of 3 Mile and the Antioch Bridge, and shallow and deep. And I don't know, maybe another dozen shakers or so, eight shakers and a couple keepers. But it wasn't red hot. So I decided, I stuck it out for 4 or 5 hours. And then all of a sudden, we're getting down to the bottom of the tide, and we weren't doing too well. I said, you know what? I'm running back over to Decker Island. We've been getting that bite on the bottom of the tide on that outgo. So that's what I did. I went back over there, and I made one long pass, and nothing. Got down to the lower tip of Decker Island, and my depth finder lit up. There were schools of fish on there. The only problem, they were small, and they have tails. They disappeared on me. I made one pass down, turn around, come back through a couple, and went back through a third time, and they were gone. But out of that, I got six keepers and a couple other shakers and a couple on and offs. And, the depth finder didn't lie to me. There's fish, and
yeah.
Boy, they started hitting. Had a couple double headers out of it, but I never got a fish over 21 inches yesterday.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just that's the nature of these fish. They hang out. They're gone. You got to figure out where they're gone. But it sounds like that bunch of small fish was a brand new bunch of fish.
That's what I was thinking too. And we're coming into smaller tides next week, so next week might be a good time again.
Yeah.
The only problems there, you got to fight a little bit of wind.
Yeah.
Although it wasn't too bad, but Sacramento side, it was a little bumpy. And then running the river, for me, on my open boat, I got to kind of slow down until everybody gets wet and beat up. But and then the grass. Water temperatures are between 71 and 74 degrees, and the grass, all the floating aquarium grass, and everything's growing, it seems like, in that warm weather. And it didn't get flushed out. And there's more grass patches now than I've seen. The old, we call Clyde Shoals above the river,
sure.
That's the bridge. I used to be able to troll that inside a couple couple troll pals.
By the old dock there?
Up there by the cliff house. And you can't even get through there anymore. The grass has grown so much. And it's right on top of the water. You can see it.
Yeah.
That stuff never used to be there.
I know.
Even 5 years ago, it wasn't there. And they're going to rob more water with these tunnels. I tell you what, the cross channels are open right now. They're stealing water off the North Sacramento River now.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was my day. It was a trip. The guys had a good time, but we just didn't want to cooperate on size.
So, yeah.
Next week, smaller tides, maybe a little bit better.
Okay, Mark, thanks for the update.
You got it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mark Wilson, out doing it. Yeah, you know, there's more weed growth along the Sacramento River than there's ever been. Of course, they traced part of that back to Sacramento City water treatment plant. So maybe they're up their old tricks, huh? Ammonia, that was nice. Anyway, okay, on the east side of the Sierra, the west fork of the Walker River has been raging just like the east fork of the Carson. But it is down to where it's got a lot of fishable area, great access in that area. They have been loading it up with fish. I talked to Pam Hammack in the town of Walker about it. Pam, the West Walker River, you know, it had a year of years when it came to water. We got off to a real late start. But you guys have got a budget for putting in fish of all sizes. I mean, some big ones, 6, 7, 8 pounds. And you have been planting the heck out of that river the last 3 weeks. People have got to be happy over there.
Oh, they're exceptionally happy and surprised because the water is beautiful. There's lots of fish in there. There's puddles of fish. People are saying they're 15 to 16 fish at one time.
Wow.
They're catching them. We put in a load of fish today, 1 to 3 pounders for our size doesn't matter derby, so we can put a lot more fish in there. And August 16th, we'll be putting 6 to 9 pounders.
Oh, my goodness.
So the river, the West Walker River, is ready and fishable and has lots of fish for everyone.
Yeah. On the size doesn't matter, Derby. That's like the how big is big, where you don't have to pre-register?
You do register.
Oh, okay.
You register at Walker Country Store and Walker General Store. You get 2 fish tags and an entry to the final drawing on Friday. But with each tag, you get a prize anywhere from $15 to $75. And then on Sunday evening, we'll pull 3 tags for $75, $50, and
$25. Wow. So does that cost anything to register?
It is $25 for registration. It is our big red moneymaker to put more fish in that river.
Yeah.
That's how we get 6 to 9 pounders and 1 to 3 pounds.
How long does it last?
It lasts from today at noon to Sunday at 4:30.
This coming Sunday?
Correct.
Okay, so you got a chance to win a lot of money in the next couple days.
You do, and we have, you know, we have cash prizes, we have business prizes, and rods, reels, shirts, hats, you name it.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I know a lot of people come from all over to fish that derby, so the Walker General Store.
And the Walker Country Store.
And the Walker Country Store. You can't miss them, right in the town of Walker. Let me ask you one other thing, Pam. Have you been planting, you know, I noticed Fish and Game is planting it, or Fish and Wildlife is planting it in addition to your plants, and they have it designated as Section 3 or Section. So it looks like they're planting the whole river from Pickle Meadows all the way down to your area.
Absolutely. Pickle Meadows has been hot. And they've gone up and down like once a week. It seems like they're putting fish in. They're not big fish, but they are fish. They're nice, you know, pan-sized, eat 'em fish. People are just having a blast out there.
That's Pam Hammack. She runs the Walker Hotel over there in the town of Walker, the West Walker Motel, I should say. And they're involved in getting all these. Now, this derby, you register for $25. It's a huge fundraiser, and that's why they can keep the fish planted in that stream and some big fish as well. And you may not be able to win a huge single prize, but they give away a lot of cash prizes, and they give away a ton of prizes like rods and reels and motel stays, and it's just a good feel thing. So if you can get over there today or tomorrow, tomorrow up to 4 o'clock, do that. It's a great money maker for the community, and it pays off in fish. And I mean, it seems like everybody wins something. People are pretty happy with that. Pam's number at the West Walker Motel, 530-495-2263. And after the break, we will talk, well, what do you do to scout deer these days? I mean, what are we looking for? Do we want to go out of state, or is there really enough deer in California? We'll throw that around. Well, you know, it's that time of year. We got to think by thinking about deer a little bit and scouting, and you know, the coastal archery season's been on. Of course, it's been really hot, but anyway, I talked to Mike Waltering of Wilderness Archery just about what the guys are seeing and saying, and how to properly go scouting for deer in California. Mike, the archery deer season on the coast has been open for several weeks now. I really haven't heard a heck of a lot of you.
Not really. I know some of the diehard guys that went out on the coast this year, kind of it got so hot so quickly that they just kind of lost enthusiasm with the temperatures being so warm. You know, and plus you have to worry if you do shoot something. You've got just probably a couple of hours to get it refrigerated, or you're going to lose it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to get at least, you've got to get it dressed and get some circulation going through it in the shade.
Get it chilled a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Over in the Sierras and beyond, I know this is the time of year the archers have their stealth cams out, and you know there's a pretty good network of information there where archers will share some of that, but not too much. What are you hearing?
I've learned to not ask too much either.
They're like tournament bass fishermen. Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
But what are you hearing?
Some of the guys that have the cameras out, they like you say, they're pretty tight-lipped, but, you know, I've asked if they're seeing stuff, and some of them are seeing stuff, and I've learned to not elaborate too much on how many questions I ask. I just keep it pretty laid back, but some of them are seeing some decent ones. A guy showed me a picture today of a really big buck that would be a trophy in any state, and he was hanging out all by himself. And that's the nice thing about now, these big bucks will stay out in the open more than they will after they lose that velvet. Once they lose that velvet, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
It's nice now to at least watch him and see him and maybe pattern him and then get a game plan.
Sure.
If you don't bump him.
Was this on public land?
It was on public land up somewhere in D5, and that's as far as I asked. I didn't go any further than that.
Like what rock were you hiding behind when you saw him?
Exactly. What turn in the road were you by? Or
well, that's good to know. I mean, you know, of course, there's guys that they've been hunting a long time. They want a trophy buck or as big a buck as is reasonable wherever they're hunting. And that just shows you there's some real trophy bucks left on public land, even in the D zones.
I think the high country, they're going to have. I haven't heard too much about down low, you know, in the foothills and stuff where everything dried out so quickly. But when up in the high country where the snow hung out for a long time, everything's still really green up there. I think they're gonna be getting or at least seeing some big bucks, bigger than normal, because they've had the groceries all summer. That's for sure.
Yeah. These guys are going to have to maybe backpack in to get a deer like that. A lot of us can't do that or aren't willing to make that effort. But what would you do if you're an unattached hunter? You want to go out in one of the D zones or any season, anything, and scout. You know, you put a stealth camera up. My goodness, you can get them for what, $89.95 now. I mean, become affordable. How would you find a place to start that? What would you do as an archer?
What you'd want to do, you'd want to find a prominent, like to just put one up, you know, find a prominent saddle somewhere, a crossing point where they go from one drainage to the next, or on a spring, you know, something like that, where they're coming to and from every day. You know, if you're in the mid Sierras, you know, like 4,000 and 5,000 feet, stuff like that, where it's, you know, it's dried out a little bit and not as much water. And you can, because they're real patternable still right now. They're in their summertime mode. And if you watch one, he'll pretty much have the same routine every day for until he loses that velvet. And then it's a whole different ballgame. And usually you have the first week or so, at least the first week, maybe the first 2 weeks of being able to hunt them in the velvet.
Yeah, with the archery.
With archery,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, yeah.
But the same with rifle. I mean, if you get on a, you know, find a real prominent saddle somewhere, and generally there'll be game trails heading to these saddles that you can, you know, where the game have been utilizing that as a crossing from one drainage to the next for a lot of years. There'll be pretty prominent trails in there. Problem is, you got to hide that camera, not, you know, good enough to hide it from the animals, but you also want to hide it, be able to hide it good enough from the people as well.
Think about that now. Anyway, that's Mike Waltrying, Wilderness Archery in Rockland. His number, 916-630-8700. It's getting more and more popular just because archers have an increased chance of getting a buck because they're not in the heavy brush with the velvet during the season. But now you have to buy a camera to go scout. But then what you've got to do is you got to put another camera up that keeps an eye on your original camera so somebody doesn't steal it. Now, those guys are really know what they're doing. Get a third camera to think the guy is being real sneaky on getting the first camera that is on the picture with the second. You got the picture? Oh, my goodness. Anyway, when we come back, bass fishing in the Delta, fishing in the city, then Gary Coe. Don't go away. Welcome back to the third hour of the KFPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims. Thanks for being here Saturdays 5 to 8 on KFPK, 1530 a.m. and 93.1 FM. I miscalculated. Don Paganelli is going to be with us at 6:30. However, we've got a bunch of other stuff, and let's start right now with Kirk Porta-Carrero, Sac River Guide, on what's going on with salmon in the Sacramento River up by Red Bluff Redding. Kirk, everybody wants to know, with all this fabulous news in the ocean, with all the fish north and south of San Francisco, if anything is starting to happen on the Sacramento up by Red Bluff Redding.
Yeah, actually, Anderson Down, which is, you know, Deschutes but Ridgebound, we have picked up a few four fish days, not a lot of them. Some days we've hooked four and landed two or three. But for the most part, we're picking away at them. And again, it's one of those deals where if you just hold off and fish it long enough, you'll pick a fish here and be surprised, and then you'll pick another one here. The difference is there's nobody fishing, which is really nice, and we've got the river to ourselves. Seems like everybody is spread out so far now.
Is it worthwhile yet? I mean, of course, the barge hole is where a lot of salmon collect and they hold there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's good things and bad things. It might be your best odds to catch a fish, but you sit in one spot all day. Is it worth it, like, from the barge, to cherry pick all the way down the river into the canyon yet, or is there not enough fish for that?
I don't know if there's enough fish, but yet, you know, usually the first 2 weeks of August, that's what I've done for years and years. I've always done that. And I, you know, go down as far as Las Bolinas and cherry pick, and you get into a school of them. Their fish are beautiful right now, so I can't say there's every fish looks like it just came out of the ocean. So they're moving fast. Nothing's staging and holding. And I can tell you one thing, even with the heat, the temperature of the water that we're fishing is 55 degrees.
Yeah.
So 57, it gets about 9 o'clock, and then maybe 58. but that's about your biting temperature is 58, 59. So you got to just hold off and wait for them, that water to warm up a little bit, because we've been getting more fish between 9 and 11 than we have from 5:36.
And you think water temperature is it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But you'll see fish come up with their backs, you know, and these early fish, they don't come up and, like, splash. All they do is come up and porpoise. You'll see, kind of see their backs kind of come up and then go back down again. And you'll see their backs come up and you look at your clients and go, look at that bright one, you know, look at that bright one. So you know they're there, and it's just getting them to bite is the ticket.
Well, and then you just need to put in your time.
You got to be patient. Just like turkey hunting or elk hunting, you got to sit for a long time and just wait.
Yeah.
If you don't have patience, don't salmon fish it at this time of the year.
Yeah. Are you using flatfish, quickfish, or roe, or both?
Oh, both. But most of the fish have been getting them in roe.
Yeah, okay. It's just that may change too, huh?
Oh, yeah. Hasn't been a flatfish bite at all yet in the last couple of weeks. It's been mostly roe, and it's been mostly, like I said, 9 o'clock to 11, 11:30, even noon, picking up fish. When that water warms up a little bit, the fish seem to turn on. And I've done that years and years past where I didn't even start till 6:30 on some years down in Red Bluff because the fish didn't bite. They were there. You'd see them. They just couldn't get them to grab it. And then all of a sudden, sun hit the water good, and it was warm, but no different. As in Shasta Lake right now, we're getting just as many fish at 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock than we are any other time.
When now?
We're getting them, in the later part of the morning than in the early part of the morning.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
And we're going down deep and getting them, but the early fish, there's not many in there early. You get one or two here and there, and then all of a sudden it kind of goes dead, and then it picks up 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and then, boy, 9 to 11 on the lake, same thing. It heats up, and, boy, those fish bite. You'd think it'd be opposite, but you go down deep, and you'll get them.
Kirk Portocarrero, Sac River Guide. It's interesting, you know, the water temperature is like 56 or something, and it warms up to 58 or 59, and the salmon start hitting. And down our area, we look for just the opposite. The water's so warm, and, you know, salmon don't like to bite in warm water, and they don't bite very well in warm water. Now, down at the mouth of the American right now, they're catching anywhere from, say, 3 to 5 fish in the morning. Once in a while, a little school will run through. They'll get 8 or 10 fish. But unlike 20 years ago, when there's 4 or 5 boats down there, there's 40 boats down there. So your odds of catching a fish are not great, but there's still a chance, you know. And some guys get a couple. Plus, there's a huge sea lion down there that isn't doing anybody any favors by stealing the fish before you can get them in. Anyway, that's not a good thing, is it? Anyway, it's getting better, slowly but surely. And so, if you want a nice, big, fresh salmon, you go fishing. You can do it right in the city limits now. You can go up with Kirk and fish the upper Sacramento. Obviously, a little more scenic up there. Okay, I talked to Todd Sedaro, Creekside Lodge, about Markleyville and the latest up there. Todd, a little rain last weekend kind of muddied up the East Fork. I assume that cleared up quick enough, huh?
Yep, it was dirty. It ran dirty for about 3 or 4 days. Now it's picture perfect again.
So has it dropped at all from a couple of weeks ago? It was still running pretty good.
You know, it's still running pretty good, to be honest with you. It's probably around 600 CSF.
Uh-huh.
But it's running extremely fishable, and fishing is spectacular.
Yeah. I know you've been, once you started planting, you had a pretty heavy schedule. Did you plant it this week?
We did. We put 1,800 pounds in yesterday, 900 pounds in the West Carson, 900 in the East Carson.
Big fish?
Yeah, they were up to 10 inches to about 4.5, 5 pounds.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Anything up Silver Creek yet?
You know, Wolf Creek Road is still closed.
Yeah.
And I went up and looked at up Highway 4 there. I went and looked it up Ebbets Pass at the first bridge up a couple of miles. There's just one big hole, but there's nowhere for the fish to move from that hole, so I did not plant it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, when the fish, that's still running pretty good too, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, if there's no fishable water for the fishermen to get down on the edge, I think that can get pretty brushy down in there.
Yeah.
And it's a small creek, and if it's got too much water, the fish, you just can't get at them.
Exactly. It's yeah. tough fishing back there.
Okay. A good week. You're going to continue to plant throughout the season?
We've got the dollars to plant all the way to the last week of October, so it'll be fish will be in the water till November 15th, the last day.
This is Todd Sodero, Creekside Lodge in Markleyville. Give a call, 530-694-2511. Now people are finally starting to stream in the Markleyville. The river has, you know, it doesn't take much. That water drops 6 inches. And all of a sudden, you've created all kinds of new fishing spots. You know, eddies, little pockets where fish can hold. And not only that, they'll find a place to hold on the edges or something, or underneath the current where you can't get at them. But that doesn't do anybody any good. So, and they've been planting it really good. So, you know, it's even though it gets a little crowded, not a bad place to go. And then the West Fork of the Carson, well, it's down to what the West Fork usually does. Unfortunately, I tell you, up in the Meadows, such a beautiful, beautiful place. It's a shame they don't put special regulations in there and see what kind of fish you could produce fishing that pristine Hope Valley. That'd be nice to find out, wouldn't it? Okay, after the break, Gary Coe, don't go away. Well, I guess everybody had a ball up at Whiskey Town last week with the Kokanee Derby put on by Kokanee Power. And Gary Coe, the president of Kokanee Power, is here to talk about it. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Just fine. Is it true that they named that lake after your group?
Well, I suppose it could be, depending upon our age.
You got some old suckers in that group, huh?
Yeah. Well, I'm at the lake. I don't know if they named it after us or not. Perhaps they should.
Yeah. So, from what I've heard, Gary, everybody had a ball. They caught lots of fish, and I guess the biggest average kokanee I've heard about yet this year.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's difficult. You know, I've heard people on your show, Bob, talking about it for the last 2 or 3 months. Good people. You know, people that I trust, they're telling the truth, and you know that,
yeah.
And you hear it. But to go up and experience it, it's difficult to put into words. It's like, you know, when we used to go to Berryessa 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
or back in, you know, in 03 and 04 and 05, the fish we were getting out of New Maloney's, that's the experience you get right now at Whiskey Town.
Wow.
I mean, the fish are just ornery. They come up behind the boat. They're submarining out of the water 100 feet behind the boat because you've got 70 feet of light out just to get down.
Yeah.
You know, and then the next one will go down and sound and stay deep. And the next one will come into the, well, this is not too bad, you know, too big of a fish. It's cooperating to some extent to get to the boat. The next thing you know, it's made a 50-foot run.
Yeah.
It's just a blast.
Yeah.
And we could talk about Whiskey Town. Of course, people have on the show. But everyone was catching fish from 16 to 17 and a half inches and nearing 2 pounds.
Man.
Randy Berquist won it.
He did?
He did. It's
Victoria's Secret Tackle?
Yep, you got it. His three fish, to give you an idea of the quality of fish we were talking about, weighed 87.6 ounces, 5.48 pounds.
Wow.
Yes. 14th place was Jack Schultz at 5 pounds even for three fish.
Close.
Yeah.
That's a lot of good-sized fish.
We ended up third at five and a quarter.
You took third?
Yes.
Okay. You're being consistent there with that one bad apple at Part E.
Yeah, I fell off the bus on that one. But we've had 5 second and thirds this year. I just can't get over that hump. Yeah. But anyway, we had fun. And we had tackle manufacturers there at a good Saturday night thing at the Red Lion. It was just a great, great weekend. We're going to do it again. We're already gearing up for next.
Yeah.
Glitterbug was there, Gary Durbin, Rick Brown, Kokanee Mart, Rick Tricklers, Affordable Tackle, Palina Peak, which is just coming on by storm, you know.
Yeah.
And Richie Height, the owner of Palina Peak and his team, won second.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Got well, him. We said all along he's a good fisherman.
Absolutely is.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's good gear. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good gear. You know, and then, I'm just kind of, can you tell I'm a little bit jacked up about whiskey?
Giddy.
The next, I did not partake in this. Sunday morning, Al Milan was out working the Derby all day Saturday and wasn't able to fish it. But he went out Sunday morning, and Robert Mulready went with him. They fished together, and they limited out in 98 minutes, had 10 fish in the boat.
At Trinity?
At Whiskeytown.
Oh, really?
The people, so, I mean, it wasn't a one-day shot in the arm just because the rain went through, you know, and it cooled off. Then people that had fished Whiskeytown Saturday got together and went over the hill to Trinity. Yeah. And with that big road improvement on 299, it's only a little over an hour out of Redding.
Yeah.
And they went and fished Trinity, and they limited out, with an interesting caveat here, in about 2 hours. Most of the boats were limited out. And then they came back over the hill and went down I-5 and went home Sunday like they were going to anyway.
I'll be doggone.
The problem is Trinity Lake is one of the five lakes in the state this year with 10 fish limits. So these two-hour limits that they're talking about are 10 fish per person.
Yeah.
The fish are a little smaller than Whiskeytown. 15 and a half inches was normal up there.
It's still pretty nice, though.
Absolutely. And they're a pound plus. They're heavy and fat and just as feisty and ornery as the Whiskeytown fish. It's a good kokanee destination.
Well, you know, for years and years and years, it's had kokanee, but they just seem to be stunted or something.
Yeah, they'd fit in a sardine can.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
And they, like we've seen in so many lakes this year, the fish are larger than normal, than regularly normal for that particular water. And this seems to be a couple of them, you know, that just properly maintained. Region 1 DFW is doing their job up there for darn sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm glad to see that. I mean, all these kokanee lakes are so cyclical. I mean, we can think of every lake that's got kokanee that has had a year with especially big fish. I mean, even lakes like Pardee and Union Valley, you know, with 16 to 18-inch kokanee.
Yes.
And then it goes away for five or six or more years. It's just crazy.
I might as well get it while you can, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So
I talked to a ranger last night because we're going to do the cast thing again, which is something we can talk about some other time, but it's coming up here in less than a month. And they're getting a few very large kokanee out of New Maloney's yet, but only onesie-twosies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's another example of that going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to figure.
It sure
is. And, of course, you throw in this water year. Of course, last year, you know, the last of the five-year drought, you think, well, geez, the kokanee are going to be stunted. There's no food. And we had some lakes with the biggest fish we've seen in years.
Yes.
And figure that one out. You know? And then
you can't.
Yeah.
It's Mother Nature playing little games, having fun and smiling down upon us. I got a late email last night from Nelson Money.
Uh-huh.
That's great to hear from him.
Old Nelson Money.
Little old Nelson Money. he's no doubt listening. My phone's going to go off.
I know.
just got back last night from the Klamath, and they had 25-plus steelhead days up there.
Yeah, I heard there's just one heck of an early run up there. And, of course, people want the salmon.
Yeah.
And but the steelhead, I mean, they just,
well,
he knows how to cherry pick that too, pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. But I mean, there's just a lot of fishing to do. You know, how are you going to get it all done?
Yeah.
You know, and then of course our Bucks Lake event, and we're hearing good things up there also about the size of fish,
uh-huh.
is a week from today. And we've, you know, it's a Kokanee team derby like we have, and but we also have side pots for Rainbow and Browns and Mackinac. They're getting big Macs up there on a weekly basis. And
right in the middle of summer, that's kind of unusual.
Yes.
That's another probably water thing.
It probably is. I guess because there's a lot of flow, and it's probably acting halfway like a river instead of a lake.
Well, who knows what, but normally they don't catch the big Macs this time of year. It's earlier in late spring, early summer, you know.
Well, I'm in the side pot, so I hope there's one caught next week.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Kokanee, you know, the 8, 9, 10-inch typical small Kokanee up there are 13 and 14-inch long fish, and they're husky. You know, they're approaching a pound at 13 to 14-inch.
Plus, that's such a pretty lake.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're going to be down at Lakeshore Resort on the south side of the lake this year for the first time, and you know, there are cabins down there, and people can call and get information on it and come on up and have a – it's at 5,200 feet or 5,187 or whatever it is, so they can get out of the heat for a few days and have a good time and come on up.
And then so people can call you, and you can help them with either camping or lodging or something, huh?
Yes, absolutely. And on our website is the flyer.
Okay, kokaneepower.org.
Exactly.
Okay, lots going on. Well, that was a terrific derby at Whiskeytown. I hope the Bucks Lake is equally successful. I mean, everybody sure had fun in that Whiskeytown one, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah. It was just, they're still talking about it.
Yeah.
And the Elks Lodge is kicking in next weekend and helping us out with the lunch. And the Feather River College personnel are coming up and helping us. It's just,
beautiful.
It's great to be back in Plumas County.
Yeah. Okay, Gary, thank you.
Have a great day. Thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. Gary Coe, his number to find out anything you want about that derby at Bucks Lake next Saturday, 916-985-4943. Go to kokaneepower.org. And by the way, Randy Berquist, who won the derby, he has a line of tackle called Victoria's Tackle Secrets, and that's the website, Victoria's TackleSecrets.com. Okay? It's a pretty interesting line of tackle. After the break, we will talk to Mr. Don Paganelli about fishing in the city and fishing in the Delta. Don't go away. Welcome back. Well, if you're looking for something to do today, you want to go fishing, you don't have to go far. You don't even need any equipment. Now, if you're over 16, you need a license, but if you're under 16, you don't. Yep, fishing in the city. Mr. Don Paganelli is with us now to tell us more about it. Hi, Don.
Good morning, Bob.
So where is the event today?
The event today is at Granite Park, which is off of Power Inn Road, right behind the family law courthouses here, off of Power Inn Road. Kind of under the power lines, just past the light rail station. And it's going to be a real great event today. We have the Police Athletic League is putting on a big raffle for the kids. They had the pond closed from Thursday till today. We planted the fish on Thursday.
Beautiful. So so people couldn't catch them out of there before the event.
Well, we hope. I mean, I'm sure there's been some here and there. They had it patrolled. But we hope to have a really good day. They put on a barbecue and all kinds of stuff, and it's all free for the kids. I believe it's 15 and under. They come in and they sign up. They get a raffle ticket. Then they come over and get a rod and reel from us and some bait. We put on a little half-an-hour clinic at 8:30. The sign-up start at 8, and then they go fish till about 1 o'clock, and then they have the barbecue and do the raffle, and they have some raffles in between. So they make it real exciting for all the kids.
That's all free?
That's all free.
That's a great deal. Who's sponsoring that now?
That's the Police Athletic League.
That's a great thing to do.
Yeah, Tom Burris with the Police Athletic League, he passed away last year, so his wife is continuing this in his memory, so this is almost like a memorial.
Oh, beautiful.
For him, and we hope to have it continue on, because it's always a great event. They do a really great job They have a lot of volunteers themselves to put this on. They get a lot of raffle prizes, rods and reels and tackle boxes and all kinds of different stuff. So, yeah, and then I think they do a giveaway for the, you know, kid that catches the most or the biggest or that kind of stuff too. So they try to make it a real fun event. And it's a pretty big pond, so there's a lot of room for people to spread out. They shouldn't get too crowded. And it should be a fun event.
Now, the catfish are how big?
I didn't talk to the aide that was here watching them plant, but I would guess they're anywhere from a pound to sometimes up to 5 or 6 pounds.
Yeah.
And they put in about 1,500 pounds of catfish.
Man.
Yeah. And I think some of the other fish, we kind of scattered them out, like over to Hagen Park. And some probably in Howe and Elk Grove, just to kind of spread the wealth just a little bit.
Some catfish have been planted in all those places for this weekend.
Yes.
Okay, but you're at, and give me the name of the park yet again.
Granite Park.
Granite Park. If you go out and can't find your way there, you get out and power in roads, somebody there is going to know where Granite Park is. Or punch it into your cell phone or do something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right behind the courthouse buildings.
Okay. And how many rods and reels do you have to lend out?
Well, we usually carry about 100 in the van.
Wow.
But right now we've got 40 sitting out that are all rigged and ready to go.
Yeah.
And they've got worms for them to fish with. And, of course, people can bring their own tackle. We have a lot of people that show up with their own gear and stuff like that. And that there's no problem with that. It's just, you know, we're here to provide those that don't have it and so that they can experience it too.
Yeah. So, if of course, here again, if you're parents that don't fish, but you have kids under 16, no, kids over 16 can do this too, but they have to have a fishing license. But if you're under 16, this whole event is free, and you can watch your kids fish. The department personnel and Don will be there to assist them, show them how to cast, just do what it takes to get them a fish.
Well, we hope they catch a fish, but, you know, it's all about having fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's great, Don. Your efforts on that are just wonderful. You've been doing it a long time, and much of the success is owed to you. Now, speaking of success, you were down in the Delta this week fishing for black bass. How was that?
It was a fun trip. It was an afternoon trip, and we had a good time. It was a father-son deal, and his 8-year-old son got into it finally, and he was catching them on his own, which was really fun to watch, as long as I was getting him pitching that worm in where he needed to get it and then just kind of dragging it out slow. We were just fishing the weed lines and up against the tules, and we ended up catching a couple of nicer topwater fish. I was showing him how to use some topwater baits, and I had him throwing those for a little while. When that sun started to go down a little bit and we had a little breeze blowing across some of these points, and had one about 3.5 pounds on a topwater bait, which was kind of fun.
Oh, that was
that.
Great. Yeah.
Of course, he doesn't want to put that down for a while. But,
yeah. Well, he won't forget that one, will he?
No. But, it was a fun trip. And, this is the time of the year where you can go out and catch a bunch of fish. They may not be real big, but you can throw plastic worms all day out there and catch fish along those weed lines. And then, you know, if you know how, you can start throwing some topwater baits on these points and these weed points and stuff like that, and catch some better fish probably. And
Can you do that in the open water in the middle of the day?
You can, on these points, on some of these points.
Okay, so
they're just hunkered down in those weeds.
Okay,
and,
I got you, yeah.
Something comes over the top of them, they've got that very short strike window. They usually take advantage of those baits coming over the top of them like that.
Yeah, should you use a weedless surface bait like a frog or something like that?
If you're in a real weedy area, you can use.
But what I'm saying, you're not confined to that if you have a little open water off a point.
Oh yeah, I mean you can throw buzz baits, you can throw the whopper ploppers, any noise-making kind of topwater bait, or just a silent frog, just a frog coming across some of that open water sometimes is enough to get them going.
Do those fish hang out? You know, the Delta's a little different. They've got all that surface cover, and it may be 6 or 8 feet of water, but do those fish hang out right near the surface?
I don't think they're very too near the surface. I think they're hunkered down in some of these pockets and just waiting for stuff to come through their zone. They like to be around current, but not fighting the current.
Uh-huh.
So some of these points, these weed points, where you've got quite a bit of current running on either side of it, they'll get right on the edges of those areas where they know food's going to be coming by or coming, trying to come through the weeds, and they'll find those pockets, and they'll just sit in those pockets waiting for stuff to come by. And the bigger fish, they don't have to eat very often, but when they do, they like to have a pretty good meal. So you get a pretty good-sized topwater bait that comes by, you usually get a pretty violent strike when they come up after it.
Yeah.
So
well, that just,
that's pretty exciting.
I'm just visualizing that. That's fun. That's fun. So you're going to go to Berryessa Sunday?
Yes, I am.
But you're just chomping at the bit.
Oh, we'll have fun. It'll be a good day. I'm going to start looking for that spoon bite, too, because that should start coming up here pretty quick.
Okay,
I'll let you know how that is.
Okay, let's do a report next week.
Sounds good, Bob.
Thank you, Don.
You bet.
Right. Don Paganelli. Don Paganelli's bass fishing experience. He'll be at Granite Park all during the morning, early afternoon, helping everybody catch some fish there. That's a great event. And then you can call him and book a trip at 916-502-3474. After the break, we'll talk about Stampede, our great Kokanee lake this year. How many of you have never had a pasty? You're crazy. They're wonderful. They have this wonderful beef, the Bavarian and Cornish. They have the chicken. They have the chili verde, the vegetarian, and a bunch of others. Nothing smells as good or tastes as good as a fresh baked pasty from the Pasty Shack at 48th and J, and they're going to mail a certificate for three of them to the sixth caller at 921-1530 or 800-834-1530. You have one, you will be hooked on pasties. They're that good, thanks to the Pasty Shack, 48th and J. Good luck. Okay, I talked to Mark Christoffel. Stampede is having one of its good years, maybe one of their best years. Listen, Mark, Stampede is sounds like the Stampede of old, at least with numbers of fish still fishing good, huh?
Yeah, Bob, it's this is probably the best year I can remember since I've lived up here. It's kicking out some very quality fish. This year's fish at 15 and a half, 16 inches, really thick. They kind of remind me of a baby flaming gorge fish, really, really healthy.
Yeah.
And then this is the first year I can remember that we've had larger fish for next year's fish. Typically, in typical years, this would be 10-inch fish that would be next year's fish.
Huh?
We're catching 13s and 14s on a consistent basis.
Well, let's just hope that plays out, because that means you're talking 18 to 20-inch fish next year.
That's exactly what that's what I've been saying. I mean, mm-hmm. I might eat my words, but there's been some hens that we've caught in that 13.5-inch range, and their egg sacs aren't even developed, so I don't see how they're spawning this year.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Give us the details as far as depth and what are you using and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it's kind of been a broken record for me. I kind of say it over and over every time we talk, but orange is working great for us, and the UV pink swingblade. The only dodger that I'm having success with out there. Orange micros. Some guys are talking about having success on pink. I've tried the pink. I can't get pink to work for me for the life of me out there this year.
Yeah.
So what I would recommend, I know there's some people that talk about struggling a little bit out there, is really kind of play with your leader length. There was a setup last week in front of the two exact same setups out. One had a 12-inch leader, one had a 10-inch leader. The 10-inch leader was getting hammered. They weren't touching the 12-inch leader. So really kind of have to just get creative and start playing around, being a fisherman, and and testing everything out.
Yeah. So what is the variation of depth from what to what should we pay attention to and not overlook?
So 35 to 45. We're seeing big concentrations of fish between 25 and 30. My guess is those are probably the cutthroat, all those little cutthroat they planted this year. We have brought our lines up into that depth, and that seems to be all we're catching is those little cutties.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely 35 to 45 feet is where you're going to be getting into most of your fish.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hurt a little bit deeper, but, you know, I threw the temperature gauge down there, and based upon what it read, 45 should be the magic depth.
Yeah. You know, they've been trying to establish cutthroat in that Truckee River system for years and years, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And I don't know, maybe now the State Department official, I don't know, but it's just been failure after failure after failure. I just can't imagine why they still do it.
Yeah, I don't know. They've done Boca and Stampede for, they planted it, I don't know the exact record, but it must have been 3 or 4 years ago. We have caught 19-inch cutthroats out of both Boca and Stampede. So a few of them have taken hold there, but it'll be real interesting to find out, you know, these pilot peaks and as many as they planted, how many are going to survive? And, you know, if they do survive, it'll be real interesting to see what they do to the kokanee fishery.
Yeah.
And that's a concern I have.
Yeah.
One thing I will say about Boca this year, for those that are going out and bear fishing stuff, I think you and I spoke about this a few times as well, but these fish are super pressure sensitive. They're scattered all throughout the lake, constantly moving. So my recommendation is try and find a pod away from the other boats. You'll have much more success.
Is this in Boca, you're saying?
No, Stampede.
Stampede. Okay. So yep, they're pressure conscious.
This year they are, more so than I've seen. Once again, this has kind of been a unique year with colors, with pressure, with sizes, and the numbers.
That's Mark Christoffel, Guide Service. His number, 530-680-1492. We're out of time. Have a good week, everyone.